Blog Talk Radio.
I'm feeling like a star, you can't stop my shine. This class is all mine, gonna open up their minds. I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a real good teacher. Yeah, I'm feeling good today, sporting backpacks and they're on their way, yo. Trying to learn the things we like, going to my class, everything's alright, oh. No one as smart as you, no one as cool as you. No,
whatever grade level or type of
I
school,
that my class is gonna rule, yeah. Now I got my class together, I got my lesson plans together, yeah. You know I got my act together,
I'm shaping students that'll shape forever.
The greatest changes in the world will almost always start at schools. And you know my mom and daddy didn't raise no fool. I can change the world for better, I can change the world for worse. So I choose to be a teacher and a blessing, not a curse.
Singing this song to open up their eyes, jumping in my ride, gotta get there all time. I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a real good teacher.
I'm feeling like a star, you can't stop my shine. This class is all mine, you're opening up the minds. I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a real good teacher.
I run my class like I know I should,
I'm making young stars like I'm Hollywood.
I thought you understood, I'm the difference in my class for the greater good, yeah.
Getting my class to spread the wind,
being at school makes me wanna sing, oh yeah, 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 yeah.
We can change the world together, teachers, we can make it better.
Change the world.
It feels like it's been cold forever, I think it's time we change the weather. We can, we will, we must succeed. Children are the future, and the future's gaining speed. If you're gonna grow the plant, then you gotta plant the seed. And if you're gonna reach a child, it starts by giving them what they need.
I'm singing this song to open up the eye, jumping in my ride, gotta get there all time. I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a real good teacher.
I'm feeling like a star, you can't stop my shine. This class is all mine, gotta open up their eyes.
I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a real good teacher.
Teacher, I'm a teacher, yeah,
yeah.
You know, I think I'll start tomorrow.
I don't have that kind of space.
We got all of these excuses.
And we're not doing what it takes.
You're thinking you don't have the power.
Look me in the face.
You have the kind of power
that could change the human race.
I'm singing this song to open up the eyes, jumping in my ride, gotta get there on time. I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a real good teacher.
I'm feeling like a star, you can't stop my shine.
Oh,
class is online, gonna open up the minds.
I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a teacher, I'm a real good teacher.
I'm a teacher, let me see the way you shine.
Come along with me,
let's be real good teachers.
I love it, I love it. Thank you so much from our production executive over there with that wonderful song. Thank you so much. It is Thursday night, and we are on our fourth night talking about the current state of education. I am your host, Demetra Davis. And I am here with a wonderful panel tonight. But before we get started, I just want to say thank you to our Trad Family Channel. It is a division of Gumbo for the Soul International, created by our own executive producer, Beverly Black. And I wanted to say what a joy it has been for Gordavi LLC and for Hummingbird and Yellow Rose Productions to sponsor this event this week. It has been so on fire, just amazing guests and the insight that we've learned. And then, of course, having our special guest all week long, so that's been wonderful. I'm going to introduce him in a second, but first I'm going to introduce our spotlight guest for the night. is Mr. LeVore Rogers. Mr. LeVore Rogers, he is a United States Army vet, and he is also an education services specialist. He works on a military base. So I want to welcome him tonight for our discussion about the current state of education. How are you doing, Mr. Rogers?
I'm very well. Thank you, Dee Dee. I appreciate you having me, and thanks for the great introduction as well. I appreciate you. Glad to be here.
Yeah, we're excited to have you here. And we have been honored all week long to have a very special guest, the Reverend Dr. Joseph Jackson, Jr. He is a leader of the Tougaloo Nine, and he has shared his story with us this week. And I tell you what, his insight has been invaluable. Reverend Dr. Joseph Jackson, Jr., do we have you on the line?
Yes, you do, Demetra. Yes, you do. And I have enjoyed the guests that you've had on your program for the last three days. And I am just interested in listening to what Mr. LeVore Rogers, has to say about his profession, and really to hear his thoughts regarding the current state of education. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, during the week, we've had quite a few key words that were said, and I'm just going to run down those really quick. On Monday, one of the key words regarding the current state of education was crisis. On Tuesday, with Mr. Green here, it was deceit. You know, we're not really getting all the information, and we are unbeknownst to us, but now we know being handled. So deceit was the word for that night. And last night, we had Dr. Maxine L. Bryant, who was just amazing, and some of her takeaway words on the current state of education was fear. That was a big one. She also mentioned, though, about feeding back into our kids and that we have good stock. I like that. And she said we have good stock. So I'm interested to see what we're going to come up with this evening. LeVore, I know that you have a vast amount of experience in education. I also know that you have a passion for it. So if you will, just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. So, again, my name is LeVore Rogers. I am an education services specialist. I work primarily with active duty service members, as well as National Guard reserves, and family members as well, so spouses, dependents. Currently, that's the population that I work with. Before I was in this capacity, I worked in special education. So my bachelor's is in special education, K through 12. So I've taught special education from kindergarten to high school in various settings, various environments. One of the more interesting environments was a psychiatric hospital to where I was an adolescent teacher. Basically 12 to 18 was the population that I dealt with. And very, very interesting to say the least, very interesting to say the least. I've also had the opportunity to teach on a college level, basically intro to special education. So I taught undergrad students intro to special education and various works in the community, after school programs, things of that nature. Yes, ma'am.
Wow. So your perspective on education you know, it's not just in the classroom, it's out of the classroom, it's in different settings. So this would be very interesting because I think that sometimes when we think about the state of education, we automatically go to the classroom. But there are other
yeah.
places that, you know, we have educators who are feeding into our kids and really working to build our kids up. And it sounds like you have been in some of those settings. So tell us about a little bit about, you said you worked at a youth group. Is a youth facility?
I have.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. So at one point I worked at it was a boys' home pretty much. And so
The
boys' home, it was these boys had offenses, everything except for major offenses such as rape and murder. But anything under the sun, you know, excluding those two that I mentioned,
mm-hmm.
Those were the offenses at the boys' home.
Okay.
And you had mentioned education being inside and outside of the classroom, and that,
mm-hmm.
that's correct. And, you know, I think that is a lot of, you know, the first thought that people go to, okay, the classroom. But education starts at home. Education starts
mm-hmm.
with the mother, the father, or, you know, the grandparents, the aunts, the uncle,
mm-hmm.
the village.
Mm-hmm.
The old saying, it takes a village to raise a child, or the African proverb, it takes a village to raise a child. Education
mm-hmm.
is during a vacation. Education is when siblings sit down and play. Education is more than just a textbook. It's
mm-hmm.
learning
mm-hmm.
in the various ways we learn, in the various environments we learn in, the various interactions that we have,
right.
watching TV. There's a lot of learning going on there, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. Everything and every experience has the potential to educate, whether it's a miseducation or it's a
mm-hmm.
proper education. So that's a great
mm-hmm.
point you brought up.
Mm, I like that, whether it's a miseducation or a proper education. Yeah, I really like that. You know, I think that as parents, when we send our kids to school and we recognize that as being the formal, proper place where, you know, our children are supposed to learn, but we don't think about the lessons that they learn out on the playground. And the lessons that they learn from being involved in sports and, you know, learning how to work as a team, learning how to respect each other. And I think a lot of times as we are talking about education, there are a lot of people that feed into our kids that we really don't see them as being the teachers that they are, such as coaches. You have a coach that teaches a sport. That is a huge example and a huge influence into your kid's life. So, you know,
yeah.
I appreciate what you have to say about that. Yes, go ahead, sir. Oh, I thought I cut you off. Sorry about that. But so I want to also ask you about the work that you do currently. So you talked about the population that you work with.
Yes,
so
ma'am.
So do you help active duty and their family members receive education, get access to education, or how does that, what exactly is it that you do there?
Yes, ma'am, and in both. So.
Okay.
Anything under the sun dealing with higher education. So say, for example, Sergeant Davis comes in and wants to pursue a bachelor's degree. So, you know, one thing I would do is, you know, talk to him about eligibility, okay, funding. Being an active duty service member, they have a certain amount of funding available. We talk scholarships and grants. We talk schools. We talk programs. We talk time management. We talk, you know, workload and how to juggle the battle rhythm with work and family and, you know, various responsibilities. So, and that's one example. But bottom line, anything under the sun dealing with higher education, whether it's, again, funding, how to fund that education, how to, you know, looking for schools that, you know, have what they're looking for, or they may be transitioning out of the military and have questions about what, you know, what routes do they need to go to get in line with a goal they may have. So, I mean, just like I said, anything under the sun dealing with the education.
All right.
But I just wanted to piggyback on something you said.
Yeah, go ahead.
So you said earlier about, like, coaches. You know, we talked about parents and, of course, educators. And, you know, I've heard saying before, you know, they say you teach what you know. But us as educators and parents and coaches and mentors, et cetera, you know, we have to dedicate ourselves to lifelong learning, you know, and we can't rest on, you know, what we think we know or what might have worked in the past. You know, we all have to grow. We all have to evolve, you know, at the same time adhering to principles and laws that stand the test of time, because there's principles that can't be broken. There's laws that can't be broken. And so I just wanted to piggyback on that because, yes, you know, there are those informal teachers or those informal situations, and we all, you know, we're all responsible. You know, they say, well, who's responsible for safety? We all are. Well, who's responsible for education? We all are, because we all play a part in educating in some way, you know, as we interact, especially those of us in a position to instill and pull out, you know, what's in, say, a student, you know, for, you know, a quick example, and expose them to different ways of thinking, expose them to themselves. You know, it's like I remember when I started teaching. Well, I started student teaching. I hadn't even graduated yet, and you know, I was telling my grandfather, hey, I'm about to start student teaching. You know, I really want to get to know these kids, and I want to get to know who they are. He said, well, you know, first, they need to know who you are. And, you know, I'm thinking, okay, I never thought about it like that. You know, I did not think about it like that, but it made sense, you know. And for them to know who I am, I had to know who I was, you know. Again, another saying, know thyself, you know. There has to be something to do the knowing. But he said, no, they need to know who you are. And, you know, I'm a facilitator. You know, I'm there to facilitate. I'm not there to dictate. I'm not there to push anything down their throats. And, again, we're talking classroom, but this pervades, you know, all realms, if you will, but we're in a position to facilitate, and one size doesn't fit all, you know, when it comes to education. Well, you know, well, what's education? What's the best way to do this? What's the best way to do that? Well, there's a lot of excellent ways, and one size doesn't fit all, and that's where, you know, as far as the classroom is concerned, building that rapport and getting to know, you know, the kids that you're dealing with. You know, get to know your audience, if you will. And, you know, I heard some of the words that that stood out from earlier on this week. You know, a lot of that, I think, comes from, you know, those teachers or those educators, those facilitators not knowing their kids, you know, because when you look at the demographics, if we're talking, let's use you know, black kids, for example. Let's use black males, for example. How many black male teachers do they see? How many black female teachers do they see? Now, and once again, it's not a one-size-fits-all, but how many of those Caucasian males or females relate to those children in a way that they really know who they're dealing with or what they're dealing with to really build a rapport?
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's not possible. I'm not. But how much do they relate?
Yeah. If you don't mind, I'm going to interject for a second. So you said you're not saying it's not possible. That is true.
No, not.
But they have to try to do it. And I think that's where the myth is. That was brought up earlier this week about the fear that people have, that, you know, teachers have. And the kids can smell it. They can smell when you're afraid of them. And so, yeah, you're right. If you don't let the kids get to know you, you don't have to share your personal business, but knowing them on a personal level is completely different, so that trust can begin. And I think that's a big misstep in the black community, is that we don't have teachers. You're right. We don't have teachers that look like us. And the teachers that we do have, you know, you have to go through that. Are they afraid of me? You know, how are they going to talk to me? Are they looking down at me? And kids process all this stuff. And like you said, watching TV, you know, good, bad, or indifferent, they're taking this information in of how the public responds to us and talks to us. And so they're going to carry that. Even our young kids, they're going to carry that to school with them. You know, I wonder if you think negative about me, like they were talking about on TV. You know, those are things that are being instilled in our kids. And then it goes, of course, to, you know, the teachers. Then do they become fearful of us, especially our young black men? So what you're saying is definitely on point.
Yeah, and, mm-hmm. you know, just, again, just to, you know, for anyone that may hear this and be unclear about what I'm saying, I'm not saying that it's not possible. I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is that, you know, there's a difference when it comes to being able to relate to a student,
mm-hmm.
and being able to, you know, motivate them and really get to a point to where you're really, things are really sinking in because of the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
There's a difference if there's not a connection there is pretty much what I'm saying.
Absolutely. I think you're right on point there. And having worked with, you know, different age groups and in different settings, especially with the boys' home, and, you know, we've talked quite a bit about our boys being funneled to the system, through the system, and starting at an early age, getting them prepared for nothing but the system. So how have you experienced motivating these young men once they're in situations like that? How do you motivate them to get out of it?
You know, everybody's motivated by something, right? And so,
mm-hmm.
you know, that goes back to building that rapport. It goes back to understanding what motivates them. You know,
mm-hmm.
I can't, you know, go into a goodie bag and just pull something out and motivate them with it. You know, you got to get to know them. You know, it's
mm-hmm.
just like when I worked at the psychiatric hospital, you know, you got, or any setting that I was in, you know, you have to get to know those kids. You know, and sometimes, you know, again, one size doesn't fit all. So, you know, I can't talk to student A or child A like I talk to child B, because child B is not going to respond to that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to know them, You know, you have to build a relationship, and that's how you understand what motivates that particular child. You know, I remember going through my undergrad studies in education, and I believe I asked one of my teachers this, or one of my professors this. It's like, well, what if the child doesn't want to do anything? What if they don't want to? What if they don't want to learn? What if they don't want to do this or do that? She basically said, you have to find out what motivates them. If it's a, you know, if it's a starburst, if it's a song, if it's like whatever it is, and there's something that motivates everybody.
Right.
And you just and I think, you know, just to not be long-winded with it, you've got to get to know them. There's no other way around it. You got to get to know them sincerely and build a relationship with them.
Yeah. You know, I think you're absolutely right. I'm curious, again, in this current state of education where we know our classrooms are too large, the number of kids per teacher, you know, the ability to get to know these kids, you know, it kind of goes to that 80-20 rule where, you know, the 20% that typically that are giving the most problems, those are the students that will get 80% of their teacher's time. And the other students who are flourishing and doing well kind of get put to the side because they're okay. So I think that's another, you know, the lack of affirmations, you know, the positive affirmations. You're doing a good job. Keep doing what you're doing. You know, do the teachers have the time, the capacity to really do that for the kids? What do you think?
And the desire and the will, you know. But there's an art to it. It's pedagogy. There's an art to it. And I do, there is, you know, a lot of overcrowded classrooms. Everything you said is absolutely true. But, you know, I tend to, you know, my first thought is to, you know, how does that teacher navigate that? You know, it's an art to teaching. It's an art to science. You know, you can engage if you're a public speaker, right? So let's just say 25 kids is a lot in a classroom, right? If you're a public speaker and you got 50 people and you're doing some type of workshop or you're doing some type of seminar or something, you can engage every single one of those people. You know, you can put you can put those kids in groups. You can do some one-on-one stuff. You're facilitating, you know, like, so what do you have to do as a teacher to facilitate learning for every single student? Every single student is not going to need you in their face 24/7, but every single student is going to need your attention. You know, and it's back to classroom management. Like, that's another thing as a teacher, you know, that I was real big on is classroom management. If you can't manage your classroom, ain't no learning's going on, period. I don't care how many kids you got in there. You can have 5 kids in the classroom. If you can't manage that classroom, no learning's going on anyway. So my thought is the art and the science of teaching. That's the first thing I'm thinking. And how do we engage these kids? All of them. I don't think there's any excuse because there's various ways you can do it. And all we're talking about is engaging every child. But, again, every child doesn't need you in their face. Every child that, you know, there's group work. There's all types of ways to do it.
Right. And more specifically, you know, engaging our kids and, you know, having them be around instructors who are willing to relate to them and to make them feel like they can learn. So I definitely appreciate what you're saying And you're talking about the basic laws and principles, laws that just are, and they cannot be changed. And one of those is for energy. You know, we know that energy is not created, it's transferred. And so as you're in a classroom setting and you are working with, again, our kids in particular, what type of energy are you transferring to them? You know, that's a basic law that can't be broken. So they will pick up on your energy. And if they feel like you are discouraging them, like they can't learn, or they haven't learned, or why don't you know, then that's even more going to make that child not want to engage with you as an instructor. So really, it builds up walls and it shuts down communication. So that's another law that I think teachers nowadays, they're not keeping their focus on the fact that their energy is being transferred to our kids. So,
yeah, now I totally agree. And you said beautifully, you know, and we talked about, you know, motivation, but, you know, you just brought something up too, you know, what inspires them, you know, what makes them smile, you know, what makes them feel good about themselves, you know, their identity, you know, what is their self-identity like, you know, what is their self-esteem like? You know, are they self-aware, you know, and putting it back on the educator, we have to know that for ourselves too, you know.
Right.
We have to be self-aware in order to, once again, that energy transfer or transmute that energy into learning, you know, as we're, you know, in the pedagogic process, you know. But you made a great point in what inspires them.
Right. And, you know, we can, and I know we can take this and run with it because you and I, we've talked about Black history, but pulling Black history out of the schools is not going to inspire our children at all because it's stripping their identity away from them and it's making them feel like they're not important. Why is this even a topic? We don't talk about teaching other history. We are history. Well, you know. So I would like to bring in our other guests as we start kind of talking about this and the topic of having Black history taken out of schools and what that means for us. So again, I'd like to welcome Reverend Dr. Joseph Jackson Jr., who is Black History. He is a leader of the Tougaloo Nine, and he has shared his story with us this week, but, you know, I could hear it every day. It is amazing, and I'm in awe of the fact that he's so humble, you know, and does not recognize what he has truly done for us, and we are so grateful to you. So I want to welcome you to the mic. And I want us to talk about removing Black history from our schools and the why and the what behind it.
Well, really, first and foremost, you know, a lot of time that you understand the suffering and the lack of attention that our school-age students get. And I want to congratulate Mr. Rogers because I feel like I have a kinship to him in listening to him explain the true commitment that you must invest in these kids and how they get to know you as a person, because they can feel whether or not you care about them by the way you present yourself to them, as opposed to letting them know, I'm the teacher, I'm the authoritarian, I'm here to do a job, and that is teaching. And what I heard in Mr. Rogers' explanation is that you have got to really be willing. You've got to want to spend time with these kids. You've got to really think about, you know, the neighborhoods that they grew up in. And I'm just saying, because for 30 years, although I'm a minister, but obviously God chose me to become a part of the criminal justice system. And when he mentioned, you know, he has worked in special education, and the boys group homes. You see, when he mentioned that, those experiences, I know what it takes to really work in those kind of situations, because I was a L.A. County Deputy Probation Officer for 30 years. And it, when I discovered, Mr. Rogers, that about 95% of the kids that was brought to me by way of law enforcement, that percentage of kids, whether they were black kids or Hispanic kids, they all came from continuation schools, sir.
Yes, sir.
And the label was special education.
Yes, sir.
And Los Padrinos Juvenile Hall in Downey became a dumping ground, a warehousing, which caused a great deal of creating an overflow situation of kids. And when I entered into the criminal justice system, I thank God for my previous experience as a minister. My 30 years having experience of living in a Jim Crow city like Memphis, Tennessee, and had to then learn how to say yes, ma'am, and yes, sir, and no. Just that a double consciousness. But when I came to the juvenile hall and was involved in the criminal justice system, I really enjoyed my career, because I did not look upon myself as a probation officer, got a badge, writing detention reports. I allowed myself really to enter into their personality on their level.
Yes, sir.
And I found out, first and foremost, I would check the JAI, the Juvenile Automated Index, to see what alleged offense that they were arrested for. And a lot of it was really, receiving stolen property, burglary. But they had just gotten into the system. And I finally realized that they needed to be educated in terms of how the system worked against them.
Yes,
look,
sir.
You know, I showed them, look, well, you know, it isn't the offense that brought you here, young man. No, that's part of the reason why you were arrested. But in your neighborhood, the police, they know of you, you know, and it doesn't mean that you are a juvenile, but you know, they really respond when a teacher says, no, he's beyond my control. He's cursing or whatever. And then here you come. And so I say it's the number of police contacts, young man, that brings you here. And I did that every kid that I had to interview that was salvageable. Now, if I had a kid that had a lengthy record of 10 to 20 priors, you know, I'm not going to really spend that kind of time on them as I would a youngster that is just coming into the system, maybe got two or three lightweight offenses. And my colleagues, you know, you're not being supervised. You can read them their rights and do an interview maybe for 5 minutes or 2 minutes. You're still going to, what? You're going to get paid. And so just to make a long story short, I would spend time with those kids that I knew was not aware of what got them there in the first place. And I've had young ladies and young men weeping and crying because I spent 15 minutes really talking to them and getting down really to the nitty-gritty. It's why you're here. And my colleague, well, man, you know, when you come to juvenile hall, I notice you're always smiling. Why are you smiling before you enter into this detention center, knowing what you're going to be dealing with? And I told my colleague, I said, you know you're going to get paid whether you spend 2 minutes with the kids or 5 minutes. To you, sir, it's a job. But when I come here, and the reason why I'm smiling, it's a ministry to me. And I come here to see how many kids that I can really get them to know me. And I found out, really, kids know your energy. They know whether you care.
Yes,
and,
sir.
And that's why listening to you, man, I feel like we are kindred spirits, man, because everything mm-hmm. that you said, that is the way I managed to have had an outstanding 30-year career working with the minors there in the juvenile hall.
Wow.
And likewise,
amazing.
Sir. I just want to say likewise, sir. And hearing you speak, you know, I feel the same way. I feel the same way. And I hope that, you know, this isn't the last conversation we have, you know, but I digress. The feeling's mutual, sir.
Wow. I love that. And it's, you know, and y'all are just saying the same thing, taking the time to get to know people, talk to them about why they are in the position that they're in, and then sincerely understanding that these kids, they can lose their energy. They know. They know who's for them, and they know who's not. Oh, I appreciate you sharing that with us. Thank you so much. I am going to ask our executive producer if we need to take a commercial break. Ms. Beverly? Okay.
Here's
well,
our child. Where's the village? The village is the mother who God chose through which to birth to me. The village is the father that planted the seed. The village is you. The village is me. The village is the extended family. Through times when I was too weak to go on, the village was the ones that kept me strong. My mama that fought to keep my kids from being adopted, when she asked friends and family to keep them and they opted. Going to court on their behalf when I couldn't appear. Being there for birthdays and calming their fears. My mama was the village when I was sick and in my disease. When God delivered me, she helped provide for my needs. The village was the man who cared enough to help me when I got my kids back and tried to be a family. The village is the people who became a part of their lives. They too loved and cared for them and won't be denied. The village is the play cousins, play aunties, and friends. The ones no matter what were there to no end. The village holds the key to the whole family. Mentoring, providing after-school care, and being a second family. The question is not, here's our child, where's the village? The question is, whose village will you be?
African-American writer, artist, and storyteller Nikki T. Anthony will be debuting her young adult fiction novel, The Price We Pay, in fall of 2023. Anthony pulls from her own personal experiences and challenges with racism. The granddaughter of a white grandmother, she experienced plenty of both while growing up. Dubbed the To Kill a Mockingbird of the 21st Century, as told from a black perspective, the novel centers on the experiences of 15-year-old Zanetta Henchman as she navigates the treacherous waters of a racially divided small southern town, where she quickly discovers that there's a price to pay for her choices. Anthony hopes her novel will open people's eyes to the damage caused by racism and the consequences of our choices in how we handle them. The Price We Pay is now available for pre-order at www.iamnikkitanthony.com.
Wow. That poem was beautiful. The Village. That's come up so many times this week as we talk about the current state of education. I'm Demetra Davis, and we are back on the air with our special guest tonight. We have LaVore Rogers and the distinguished Reverend Dr. Joseph Jackson, Jr., leader of the Tougaloo Nine. We are talking about the current state of education for our kids, for our community, and what we can do to impact and what we should do to impact, but more than anything, what we need to know also about this, because knowledge is power. And I think I've learned so much this week. It's, my head is full. So this has been an amazing experience for me. So I want to get back to what we were talking about, which, of course, is taking Black history out of school. I would like to get some feedback from Mr. LaVore Rogers on his perspective on that.
I'll be as clear and concise as possible. We're at war. We're absolutely at war. And if you take away a people's identity, you take away their sense of self, their sense of power. There's no other way I see it. We're at war. And that's the only reason why you would do that. That's the only reason why you would take that you would kidnap millions of people, millions of African people, displace them, take their names, take their children, rip up the family, okay, separate the family, disseminate them, turn them against each other, okay? I mean, and I can go on and on about how and why, but the one word is we're at war, and that's why it's being done. You know, we have it's two things. I was told this by his name is Reverend Bevel, may he rest in peace. He told me men only talk about two things: work and war. If we're not talking about work or war, what are you talking about? If you're not focused on work, if you're not focused on winning wars, what are you doing? And so we have you know, I believe it was in the 60s. There was a big movement, big Black History movement, to where, you know, that's where, you know, individuals like Dr. Ben, Dr. Clark, Dr. Jeffries, Van Sertima, Francis Krebs Welsing, Anthony Browder. I mean, there were so many instrumental individuals that focused on Black people understanding who they are, where they come from, what their lineage is, what your name is, what your history is, who you are. And if you take why take out the history books and why is things being erased, so we don't know who we are. That's not done with most anybody else, you know. So we're public enemy number one because of who we are. And so that's why you take us out of the history books. That's why we don't know who we are, because it's a systematic conditioning, so we don't know. Why? Because we're at war.
Wow. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You know, you were telling the truth right then. Reverend Dr. Joseph Jackson, Jr., what would you like to say about that? Any comments?
I concur with every statement. Mr. Rogers has indicated, and I really have to hold my peace when 62 years ago my mentor, my leader, Mr. Medgar Wiley Evers, really planned for us to enter into the white only library in Jackson, Mississippi on March 27, 1961. And the idea of just checking out, wanting to check out a book, me and my eight colleagues, we were there, and only to find out that we were arrested for a breach of the peace. Really, you were jailed for walking into a whites-only library to check out a book for your college class. Mm-hmm. And here, 62 years later, can you imagine how I feel? That we're at war, like Mr. Rogers said, that they want to, come on, remove our history from the history books because
mm-hmm.
it may make the white students feel uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. How long have you been feeling uncomfortable?
That's what I'm talking about. And to selectively choose books to remove from the libraries mm-hmm. because of their bias understanding of the subject matter when it comes to our history. And I have a book titled Too Much and Never Enough. That's written by the former president's niece, Mary L. Trump, who is a clinical psychologist. And in her book, no, it was The Reckoning. This was her second book. She said in this book that she did not know anything about Black history until she entered college. And so the question is, why should the racist white supremacists be concerned about our history? Because they know that our history and the way we were lynched, the way we were oppressed, they want to sanitize their history. But they fail to realize that their history is really woven into our history.
Yes, sir.
And so where we are now, it's hard for me to really realize that coming out of a Jim Crow jail in Jackson, Mississippi, 62 years ago, fighting now for the same civil rights which our black history is threatened, it's more than I can bear. And we as a black race, we're going to have to do something to shake up Quo, because they are definitely upset as a result of the last 2020 census, when the white race realized that not only the black race has increased in numbers, the Hispanic race has increased in numbers, and now they are being confronted with an interracial coalition after the removal and the reinstatement of Justice Jones, representative of Nashville, Justice Pearson, representative of my city, Memphis, Tennessee, and then you've got Gloria Johnson, representative of Knoxville, and Zoe Zephyr, who is a transgender there in Montana. They banned her from ever appearing in the state capital of Montana. But you know what the youngest congressman, Max Frost from Florida, he said, we're all fighting together. We're all involved with bringing about political change. And so that is what I'm so optimistic about, because it's going to be the next generation that's going to bring about the change that America, with its hypocritical principles, really are going to come to bear. And so, yeah, they can try to erase our history. They can hang us. They can burn our bodies. But as Mr. Rogers said, let's face the fact, we are in a war.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely.
So can I piggyback real quick, Ms.
Yes.
Yes,
please.
You know, again, I'm over here trying to be respectful and quiet, you know, but I'm over here shaking my head in agreeance. And I really appreciate hearing, you know, everything you had to say. And, you know, one thing I just want to piggyback is, you know, bridging the gap. You know, we really got to bridge the gaps, because, you know, we can't detach from our scholars. We can't detach from the scholarship, which they're trying to take away. We can't detach, you know, just like, you know, Brother Michael Effers, you know, like he mentioned, you know, Stokely Carmichael. There's so many, and we can't detach from that, and we can't. And you know, I just wanted to piggyback and say, yes, we have to bridge the gap, because you know, the generation, you know, after me, and you know, they don't necessarily know about these people. You know, they don't know about this scholarship. They don't know about the struggle. You know, all they hear, you know, no disrespect to Dr. King, but that's all they hear is Dr. King. You know, that's all they hear. I have a dream. That's all they hear. Once again, no disrespect. But we have to make sure we bridge those gaps, and we have to each one teach one. We got to hand it down. We can't let none of this get lost.
Which is exactly why they want to take it out, because if we're not teaching our kids, they're not teaching our kids.
They won't learn.
Then who's going to teach them? Exactly.
Well, you can't exactly. Expect the oppressor. You can't expect the oppressor to teach you how to get free.
I know that's right. That's
Amen,
right.
Brother Rogers.
Mm-hmm.
Amen.
Yep. And taking away the tools that you need even for a fair fight, which goes to education and having our kids know how to read, how to write, how to critically think, all the things that we know are being instilled into others, but not into ours. And so I agree, we are at war. Because again, like I said earlier, knowledge is power. And they're trying to take that knowledge away. So I appreciate the insight. I appreciate the comments. And what I don't appreciate is how quickly this time goes by. So I do not appreciate that. This is an excellent, excellent conversation. And I am so happy to have been a part of this evening speaking with both of you. So I want to give, Lavore, I want to give you the opportunity to make any last comments. And if you want to share any contact information, feel free to do that as well.
So I'll just leave it at this. You know, what are we working on? What are we doing? What work do we need to do to get us where we need to be? What wars are we fighting? What are we doing to win the wars for us and our people? What are we doing to uphold the legacies, you know, that of those who came before us, of the scholars that came before us, the revolutionaries that came before us? What are we doing? What are we doing? What are we working on? What wars are we fighting? And I just want to say, brother, I appreciate sharing this forum with you. I feel like I've known
you
for a while, and it was a true pleasure,
Same here, brother.
That energy. Let's see what you got to say, Reverend.
Well, I'm going to make brief. Mr. Rogers said the word that many young men his age and of his generation is what Frederick Douglass has said all along, is that the power that be does not concede without a demand. It never does, and it never will. We must now, by us knowing and acknowledging, like Mr. Rogers said, we're in a war. So we're here to agitate, you see, because my role model, Dr. King, said what? A year before he was assassinated, my role model said, yeah, that dream that I had there August 28th, the March on Washington, he said, that dream now has become a nightmare. Now, what does that mean? Hey, it's a nightmare now. We got to go. This is a war. And Mr. Rogers came on out and said exactly where we are now. And he didn't sugarcoat it. So I congratulate you, my brother. And hopefully, man, we can get together on the phone and continue this legacy of knowing what we've got to do. So thank you, man.
Yes, sir. Absolutely will do. And thank you.
Thank you. Thank both of you so much. I'm just going to throw this out there real quick, and I know Reverend Dr. Joseph Jackson Jr. will catch it. Mr. Lavore Rogers is from Tennessee. I just want you to know that little piece of information. You got all these people.
I live in Tennessee, not to.
You live in Tennessee, yeah.
I live in Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. So you got another one. Yes. Mm-hmm. The Southern
Baptist. Yeah.
Road trip, brother. Road trip.
Oh, man. Well, thank you all so much. This has been a wonderful evening, another wonderful evening, discussing the current state of education brought to us on Tribe Family Channel, a division of Gumbo for the Soul International. I wanted to just close out tonight by saying this has been an amazing week. Tomorrow's our last night. If you have not been listening, please go back and listen to these in the archives, because they are just chock full of knowledge, things that we need to know. And just like tonight, understanding that we are at war, and that is our word for Thursday, war. Thank you
all
so much.
I appreciate it. You can give Mr. Rogers my phone number, since you are familiar with Mr. Rogers, and he can call me.
Yes,
he can call me anytime.
I will do that.
Yeah, and you'll have mine, and you do the same. You can call me anytime. And gas your vehicle up too, because pretty soon we need to meet halfway. I come to Memphis, or however you want to do it.
All right. Does our executive producer have any comments for the night before we sign off, Ms. Beverly Black?
You can reach Reverend Dr. Joseph Jackson Jr. at thetougaloo9@gmail.com. thetougaloo9@gmail.com. This has been a Gumbo for the Soul International.com production. Thank you for listening. And thank you all for your right and profound communication.
We will
win. Good night.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Please visit Gordavi.com. GORDAVI.com for your one-to-one coaching consultation.
Chicks on them, neighborhood know we coming. JK them, snakes cannot violate them. Pimps memorize his line verbatim. He reps in YO, gifts he knows to Wido. Not church, that's how we tied though. He walks the tenement, sleeps at a super fly condo. My kind of nigga, my icon, my idol. No certificate for this misfit who handle business. The odds stacked against him, he fights back, Mac and Benzes. Never puts cash to ask before.
I have no fear whatsoever of anybody or anything.
Somehow he got around the pitfalls of the system. When he walks, we watch. When he talks, we listen.
To the mirror, and as you I say, look at me. Everything you like, it fresh from the factory. Everything you do, it impact me. Your lifestyle attract me, parents try distract me. When I grow up, I want to be like you exactly. And as soon as I get up, I distract me. There's no way anybody could have stopped me.
My gravity is the Wadi Ara, and all the mannerism descending out of order, and man start moving busy. The locking of the corners, the streets and all the buildings. Me love you like a father, me ready and me willing. Anything where you are taught is lying my dominion, and me have similar thoughts. I share the same.
So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not feeling any man. My eyes have seen the glory.
conscious. The paramount, the Caesar, the monsters, the grandiose, the monsters, the hell on earth pompers, Ellsworth, Bumpy Johnsons, the Harlemites, the Garveyites, black as the credit card we swipe, popping down the night for all of mine. I can see myself back at the Audubon, Malcolm on the podium, shells drop to linoleum, swipe those, place them on display at the Smithsonian, next to only gems that were left behind by holy men, infectious, charisma of those who gave us direction, the anti-sexes, resistance against the oppression, progressive thinking, ghetto speakers, protesters against the colored only section to the genocidin, the frost mixing, the contradiction, the cross, the crucifixion, the loss we took for sinning, on Easter's back inscription, that it was written, that nothing is coincidence, and they took our leaders and they lynched them.
Tri-Family Channel, Tri-Family Channel.